Well, thank you. I'd like to welcome you all to the Board of Directors meeting for Adeo Charter School Nonprofit Board, which operates Adeo Charter School 2, Adeo Charter School 3, Adeo Valley Charter School, Grossmont Secondary School, Mira Secondary School, and Sweetwater Secondary School. I'm Greg Haggard, Chairman of the Board, and I will facilitate the meeting. Let's take the roll first. When I call your name, please provide the group with a brief introduction for the benefit of new members and members of the public. Now we have Laura Barrero excused, and we have Christina Stevens excused. So Chris Gordon.
Chris Gordon, board member present, and glad to be with y'all for this first board meeting for me.
Thank you. And Jim Herr.
My first board meeting as well.
Thank you. Waylon Myers.
I am the Myers who cannot click a mute button. I am present and nice to see you all. I'm more board member.
So we've got a couple of new ones. So Waylon, if you could just briefly, you're not a new one, but if you could just briefly tell us about you and what you do.
Absolutely. So I'm the CEO of a local software development company, and I've been doing that for a little over almost 16 years now. I've been on the board now for the last year and a half, I believe. Something along those lines of the Adeo schools, and really enjoyed participating in all of this.
Thank you very much, Waylon. Jim Herr, will you just give us a brief sketch on you?
Sure. I'm CEO of Perrin Hall. We're in our 75th year. My daughter actually went to a charter school here in San Diego. Super supporter of what you do. I've known Mary for 5 years or so. I think the world of her and this organization, and I'm just thrilled to be on the board.
Thanks, Jim. And Chris Gordon, please.
Well, Jim just said it well. I echo what he said, but I'm Chris Gordon. I'm the CEO of Re3 Gifts, and we help companies build their culture through strategic gifting. And same with Jim, you know, new board member, but very familiar with the cause and with the amazing work that this organization is doing. And so pleased to join you all and be a part of it.
And we are
Thank
so
you very
honored,
much.
If I could just say, we're so honored to have them. You know, our boards are include parents, but also include people with areas of expertise that they share with us. And we're so grateful for that, the business orientation that they have and the insights in terms of the environment, financial and social and otherwise, are very valuable. So we're very, very grateful for both of you joining us. I know you've been kind of on the sidelines for a long time, but thank you for being a part.
Thank you. And I'm Greg Haggard, Chairman of the Board and happily retired. And just wanted to mention, I know these board members personally and professionally, and they are high quality board members. Mary did a great job bringing them on the board. Their hearts are in the right place. They know what they're doing. Like everybody at the Altus group, they are smarty pants. So this is a good group. So thanks, everybody. And Mary, we have a special guest today. Would you mind introducing Dr. Loomis for us?
Dr. Loomis is very special because not only is he positionally represents our authorizer nobly, and it's such a delight to work with his district and his department because they know what they're about. And he's got tremendous background and understanding and is so supportive. So we are very, very grateful. Is it appropriate now for an introduction? Yes,
please.
Okay, Corey, can you tell them all about you and where you come from and what you do?
Sure, absolutely. And I don't know if this is kind of a segue to the item yet or just a brief intro.
Brief intro.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. I'll try to keep my comments brief because I'll have a few minutes of your time coming up. But I oversee the work at Riverside County Office of Education with our charter school unit. So our unit, we oversee 14 schools, which is about 12,000 students. So I've been here going on 6 years, but I also understand a lot of the heavy lift and challenge on the charter end. So prior to coming on the authorizer seat, I was also a charter leader founding charter parent for 15 years. My wife still does back office business for a charter school up here in the Inland Empire. But really, and I'll share more of kind of what we're about, but my heart is aligned with your hearts as far as doing what's best for kids. So thank you so much for the opportunity to be a part of the meeting.
Yeah, and he's a scholar and a practitioner, which is always wonderful to find at the district level. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you and welcome. So we're on to item 1.3, establishment of quorum. And I do believe we have that. Do we have a motion for approval of item 1.3? Who wants to go off mute first?
Dang it. I'm Waylon Myers, board member, and I'd like to make a motion to approve item 1.3.
Thanks. I'd be looking for a second from Jim or Chris.
Jim Herr, board member, I second.
Thank you. Now, because of the unique nature of this Zoom call, I have to call individually to take roll. So I'm going to go ahead and do that for this item. So all those in favor of item 1.3, your vote, Chris?
Affirmative.
Thank you. I didn't state that very well. I should have said, may I have your vote on item 1.3 and not talk you into what it is I want you to do.
We will figure it.
You would think after 7 years I'd figure this out, but apparently not. So on item 1.3, Chris Gordon, your vote, please.
Yay.
Thank you. Jim Herr, your vote.
Yes.
Thank you. And Waylon Myers.
Waylon Myers, I vote aye.
And Greg Haggard votes aye. So that passes unanimously. So we're on to the Pledge of Allegiance. If I may ask you to rise and we'll get through this, please. Thank you for the flag, Angela. Ready? Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag,
to the flag
of the United States, of America, and to the Republic, for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Always a little awkward, but still lovely. Thank you. So on to 1.5, approval of agenda. So do I have a motion of approval with the recommendation from Mary for the agenda that we have before us? It's item 1.5.
I'm Waylon Myers. I make a motion to approve the agenda, item 1.5.
And I will second that motion, Chris Gordon.
Thank you. So I'll call for your vote on 1.5, Chris Gordon.
Aye.
Jim Herr.
Aye.
Waylon Myers.
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. Thank you. So 2.0, public comment. Public comment for items of interest to the public and within the scope of the Adeo Charter School, Inc. Board non-agenda shall be no longer than 2 minutes. Public comment for agenda items shall be no longer than 3 minutes. Speakers may not yield their time. In meetings held over Zoom, any person who wishes to make a comment on either non-agenda or agenda items shall use the raise hand feature of the Zoom to notify the board. In accordance with the Brown Act, no discussion or action may occur at this time, but it is the board's prerogative to respond or give direction to staff. All public comment will be heard at this point in the agenda as ordered below. Each item on the agenda being commented on will have a maximum of 20 minutes allotted, and each non-agenda item will have a maximum of 10 minutes allotted. If necessary, the board chair may equivalently decrease the time for each speaker in order to stay within the allotted maximum. So 2.1, non-agenda public comment. This is an opportunity for members of the public to speak to the board on items not on the agenda. Speakers will be limited to 3 minutes per speaker. And this item is limited to 20 minutes unless otherwise modified by the chairperson. Are there any public comments on items not on the agenda? And I don't see anyone raising their hand or any members of the public. So I'm going to move along to 2.2, agenda items, public comment. This is an opportunity for members of the public to speak to the board on items that do appear on the agenda. Speakers will be limited to 3 minutes per speaker, and this item is limited to 20 minutes unless otherwise modified by the chairperson. Are there any public comments on agenda items? Okay, I'm going to move along then. So 3.0, closed session. We will now move to closed session to address two items. And I'm, let's see, do I need to read those at this, 3.2? And it has to do with 3.2.1 is confidential student discipline matter. let's see, 3.2.1.1, consideration of potential expulsion, case number 202301. And then also we'll be discussing 3.2.1.2, consideration of potential expulsion, case number 202302. So with that, we will move to closed session, and I'm calling the time at 1:11. So the board will, you're going to put us in our
rooms.
In our rooms. We're going to our room, discuss this, and we'll be back. Thank you.
We're back.
Thank you. We're back. I'm just going to take a moment to scan and make sure all of our board members made it back.
There's Waylon, Chris, and
Okay, we're back. Okay, thank you very much. So the time is 1:26, and we're back to open session. And I would like to report that the board approved the expulsions, and we are now moving on to the administrative items 5.0. So with that, 5.1, consider acceptance of the resignation of Greg Haggard effective March 2nd, 2023. That's me. So I have all kinds of thoughts about this and all kinds of things I want to say. But as some of you on this call know, if I get going, I'll just start bawling like a little baby and I won't be able to get through it. And, but this has been such a wonderful experience for me. I am so proud of this organization that is an organization of people that actually get this done. You know, this is one of the, I mean, this is going to sound odd, but this is the way I look at it. This is one of the most professionally run businesses I've ever seen, because our business is educating students, and that's what we do, and transforming those lives. But this group is really well run, and Mary does a spectacular job, and she knows what the secret sauce is, and that's finding the right people and motivating those people. And this is just the most unbelievable organization I've ever been involved with. And I've been on other nonprofit boards that can't find their way around the room, but this one is amazing, and you should all be very proud and happy to be involved. And I have been here, we had to look it up, since July of 2015. And it's just been a huge honor for me to be able to, in some tiny, tiny way, just support their organization. I just feel like all I do is wave a flag from the back of the parade and do whatever I can. But I'm just so happy. I'm sad I have to go, but I've retired. I'm going into a different stage of my life, and it's time for me to focus on other things. But it's been an honor. Thank you so much.
And really, our heartfelt thanks from all of us. You know how sad it makes me to see you go, but I completely understand. You have wonderful plans for your retirement. That's amazing. I think now's the time to do it while you can. How wonderful. So good for you. But you did promise that you would continue to be a friend of the school. And
I have no choice.
That's true.
Because you asked me.
You're on call.
Absolutely. It's my honor.
Your expertise, your professionalism, but most of all, because of your heart, your caring. You've been so caring about our kids and about our staff, and we'll be just ever grateful to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes, it's been really an honor, and I've been just so proud to be a part of it. Okay, so with that, you're going to let me off the hook here. I'm looking for a motion to approve 5.1.
I'm not doing it. Okay, make a motion to approve item 5.1, Waylon Myers, reluctantly.
And this is Jim Hearn. I second that motion, reluctantly. Greg's a favorite person of mine.
Absolutely.
I had to do this twice.
What's up? Yeah. I've been quitting left and right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I'm going to take the vote before I start bawling. Waylon, your vote.
Aye.
Chris.
Reluctant aye.
Jim.
Aye.
And Greg, I'm thinking about it. No, I'm out. Okay, so I'm an aye, so that's unanimous. And again, I'm sad about it. So 5.2, consider approval of Waylon Myers, chairman of the board, effective March 2nd. Waylon, you've been around for a while. I've known Waylon personally and professionally. I've got a chance to see him. He, like I said earlier, like the rest of the board members, he is really talented. And he has both the left and the right side of his brain that operate. I only have at best one of those. So I'm amazed by you, Waylon. So
thank you, sir.
So we're looking for a motion to approve 5.2, which is putting Waylon up as chairman of the board.
Chris Gordon, and I motion to approve.
And this is Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Okay, then I will take I'll call for the vote. Chris.
Aye.
Jim.
Aye.
Waylon.
Aye.
Did you get your vote on yourself?
I don't know, but I better.
Well, just, you can, I mean, should we have you abstain?
Maybe I should abstain. I should probably
abstain. Probably abstain. It seems like the right thing to do.
That does seem like the right thing to do. You're right.
Out of modesty, I would think you'd abstain, Waylon. But yeah. Greg Haggard votes aye, so that passes unanimously. So congratulations. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the honor, Mary. I really appreciate the trust you're putting in me, and I hope to do good service with this group because it is an amazing team. It's always been very impressive to be a part of it.
Well, and I have to tell you that it was a broader discussion of board members, and everyone agreed you were the person to do it. I do have a question, though. Lynn, with Waylon abstaining, that's a vote of three. Don't we need Waylon to vote in order to have a majority vote there?
No, it's the majority of the present. And so we have four board members and three is voting. So we got
all right. Thank you. I just wanted to double check so he couldn't escape us. Once we voted, he's there for
fair
sure.
Enough.
So we got you. We got you, Neil. Thank you very much.
All right. 5.3, California Fair Political Practices Commission Statements of Economic Interest, Form 700 Annual Filing. This is the least fun thing the board members will do. This is an informational item. I'll remind you that you're required to annually file the Form 700. This year, the deadline is April 3rd. The Conflict of Interest Code was amended at the August 31st, 2022 board meeting. The Form 700 will now be filed with and retained by the Adeo Corporation. Please submit an original hard copy of Form 700 to Angela via U.S. mail. And or you can arrange to have Angela pick up your form at your convenience. If you need assistance in filling out the form, please contact Lynn Alipio and or Angela Mary prior to April 3rd. This is serious business. You get in trouble if you don't fill out that form. Okay, sorry, I'm cleaning my screen there. Okay. So 5.4, President's Report, 5.4.1, governing. Maybe I'll just let you read this. Mary, you have a staff report on these items, 5.4. I'll just let you take it away.
5.4, right. Well, let's begin with Corey Loomis. Corey Loomis has a wonderful presentation for us. It's called Governing for Greatness, and it's a presentation. He gave us the first half. You should all be able to see his slide deck. And so we really appreciated the first half. And this is like a continuation, I believe. So, Corey, take it away, please.
Thank you so much. And I know you have a busy schedule, but I appreciate the time. So the longer that I do this work, working with charter schools on either side, I realize the importance of your role. And I appreciate the expertise and the breadth of knowledge that are upon the board and that are joining the board. And that's just really an excellent example of high quality and what it takes to run a highly effective nonprofit with all the schools that fall under your purview. And so really for me, this is partly just building relationships and connecting with the board and trying to provide some professional development nuggets in this presentation. But there are some of these, so I'll probably just share, knowing again the background and the expertise that are with the board. I create this general slide deck for all of our schools. I make the rounds to all of our schools every year. So this is my third year doing that. And then each year I try to bring some new information to share with boards. And so part of this, I'm going to actually kind of streamline, because you're already doing a lot of things well. So as I go through it, you might just kind of think through, are there any gaps, or is there anything that the board may consider to continue to strive towards excellence in all facets of your organization? Next slide. And I did share with you earlier, our overlapping and collective why is that we're really student focused. And we really sincerely mean that as authorizers. We don't see ourselves as compliance officers here at Riverside County. We're all educators first. In fact, my team, my administrative team, all three of us came directly from the charter sector. So we have a better understanding and have empathy and understand what it takes and the challenges that face charter leaders, especially at the forefront, at the school level. So we have that background. And so we are sincere, and we really, we feel that together we're better. And so that connection almost with a three-legged stool of us with school and us with the charter boards that govern them, we're going to be collectively stronger moving forward. And I do share with all of our schools, I really want to build our portfolio here, at least at Riverside, with our 14 schools. We really are grounded in trusting and strong and firm relationships. And we pride ourselves in that. And so we're all about full transparency and working with schools. And I'd like the state to look at some point, other authorizers, when they look at what's happening here, I think we have some uniqueness that's happening that could benefit other authorizers and other portfolios up and down the states. Because at the end of the day, we all want high quality options for kids. So that's our collective why. Next slide. So really, the message behind this is that there's always going to be challenges that face the board. And this is just a presentation, the numbers you see in front of us, just a tapering off and leveling off of charter numbers in general in our state. So that's not uncommon. We hear that with districts, with neighborhood schools across the state. There's been a plateauing in several areas, a decline of enrollment. So the reason for me just bringing this out as an example, there's always going to be challenges down the road. And for the board to have some foresight and to be prepared of how to face those challenges is imperative. Next slide. I'm going to just do a quick flyby, and this might be helpful for our new friends, of what I shared last year. And I've been following this research at the national level. It's a National Charter School Resource Center. It's an extension, an arm of the U.S. Department of Education. They've been doing a lot of work the last couple of years around honing in what are the areas, what are the common areas for charter school failure. So they studied several charter schools, organizations over the years, and they came up with, I think, about five or six areas where there's common themes of why a school may close, charter school may close. What are those, and what can we do to help with that? So these last couple tools this year and last year are really pointed to charter schools themselves. This one that I'm sharing, and I'm sure we could share this slide deck for the board, they all have the live links to the direct resource. So this one, again, is just for charter boards themselves. Next slide. This is just an example of a tornado, right? It makes sense that if a school has building up distresses and they're compounding, that could ultimately lead to a school failure. So what you see are the identified areas that they saw were common themes of where the breakdowns took place. Next slide. When I provide information to school leaders and also specifically to charter board members, I always am aware of capacity and time and how much board members are already vested in other areas. And so I try to find what I call plug and play toolkits or resources that are easily adaptable and easily put in play. And so what you're seeing here is just, again, example from that particular toolkit on looking for gaps within an organization of the following areas where there could be distress. And so this particular toolkit is kind of a short rubric, and it's always the board being aware of exposure to liability and where can we shore up any particular liability exposure. Next slide. All right, so this one has a great toolkit, and I think I misspoke. The other one was for a school leader. This toolkit that I'm gonna share just a little bit more with you now is actually geared towards charter boards. And so it's actually a simplified version of the charter toolkit, but now this is for boards understanding their role, and all these are at a higher level. Again, once you get hold of the slide deck, that particular hyperlink will take you to this direct resource. Next slide. So of course, I don't need to tell you this, you're well aware that you're responsible for all facets of the organization, whether it's performance, fiscal health, facility operations. And I understand that's definitely a tremendous, awesome burden that you don't take lightly. And I appreciate everything that you do and the time that you commit to your students or family. There's nothing more satisfying and beneficial than helping in this facet, especially with education and helping families and students better their lives around education. Next slide. So I'm going to go through this quicker because I know this will probably be the review for you. So again, within our portfolio, we have a little bit of the bell curve. So we have a few of our charters, our CMOs, similar to yourself. They tend to be efficient, effective, and have understand systems that are required that need to be in place and monitor those systems. So, and then I have some single sites that are relatively newer and they're building up their capacity as a board. So I'm gonna click through this and I'll make sure to not read through the slides for you. But essentially these are the areas on the slide that you see that the board should be aware of on a constant regular basis. Next slide. And so this particular toolkit really suggests for boards to have their own governing board goals each year that parallel and support the school's goal. So each of your schools have their own LCAP. So it's being incongruent and not doing anything to contradict, of course, the school's goals, but almost parallel goals where you're gonna see areas within your own board. And whether it's you might need to expand expertise in a particular area, that might be a goal that you would set forth to move towards. And so this is just an illustration that the board should have their own goals as well each year. Next slide. So with those different facets of oversight, this was just a sample of a dashboard type of tool that could be monitored on a regular basis. So I know the board is getting some of these, areas of oversight on a regular basis, enrollment, the numbers, financially. I know that the board and your staff are tracking very closely with that. So it might be some of these other areas that might not be covered as well, thinking through systems that put in place to help monitor those. But this was just an example in the toolkit. Next slide. This is just a reminder that the role of the board is very impactful, and a key role is doing effective, ongoing, regular evaluation of your school leadership. So these would be steps, chunking them down into goals and evaluation process for your key leadership is an important role of the board. Next slide. So just reminders around meetings and being a part of your meetings in the past and today. I know you're very dialed in. I'm not going to spend much time on talking about these different facets because I feel that you're there. One piece to tease out is always the challenging part around asking the tough questions. Maybe that would be the only one that I would highlight, because sometimes that could be challenging in itself, to have the courage to have to ask the tough questions. But I think once we're family and student focused, that really helps cut through that as well. Next slide. these are just really what's highlighted of what makes up an effective board. So all these illustrate what constitutes that. And I did talk about systems and being aware of systems in place to make sure that everything is being tracked and monitored on a regular basis. Next slide. This is just a sample of how we're just breaking down annual goals into monthly and quarterly basis and tracking on those and having a bigger review of those annual goals, which you usually do during your summer retreat. Next page. So that was kind of the chunk that I wanted to share, was that particular toolkit geared towards charter boards. Within that toolkit, it does have rubrics in those different areas, some of which you may feel very confident and strong and healthy in, and then there might be that you might have questions. So I guess my encouragement would be just to evaluate any potential gaps and make plans to shore up those gaps. That's where that toolkit could come in handy. So here on out, just going to share a couple of reminders and close up my time with you. So up here with Audeo Valley, we do have renewals, not for a couple of years, it's 3 years out. And this particular school up in our neck of the woods is an alternative school, a DAS school. So we do have renewal come up, and we're working closely with Wade and Sharnita around that, and it calls for alternative metrics. So we went through that process and are working closely with your leadership. So we feel strong and good about that. Renewal is just a big conversation, as Mary and team know, up and down the state, because we're just getting back into the cycles of renewal, which are beginning next year after we had, and some even as early as this year, but we had a hiatus and a break during a pandemic where all the terms were extended by 2 years. That 2 years is a sunset, and so now we're kind of back in that rhythm of renewals with all schools up and down the state again. Local control accountability plan. So my only what I wanted to note here was essentially that we work closely with Sharnita and team and reviewing the LCAP, providing support around the LCAP, and we do provide our annual feedback around that LCAP if you're ever interested in learning more about that. Teacher credentialing, this is a little bit of a footnote. There's been a shift in the last couple of years regarding higher accountability to all schools, and in particular for charter schools. There was some extra flexibility that was cut away about 4 years ago around teacher credentialing. Now the state's tracking in multiple levels that are outward focused and in public. And actually off the top of my head, I think I remember our campus was doing well with their credentialing. But just another conversation that's out there in a charter world would be around credentialing. And now there's a public facing database where the public could go in and type in a school and see if there's any missed assignments within that school or any credentialing issues. So that was my only thing that I want to highlight, that that's new and it's different. And there may be conversations with families within your network around credentialing and that outward facing information. Next slide. All right, I'll go through these last couple of slides as a faster pace here. These are just pointing you to, go ahead, next slide. These are pointing you to some additional resources. Again, I try to find relevant, easy to access information. So this is that organization that I was sharing with you earlier, and that's the link to that. So besides, they have a very broad range of support for charter governing boards. They have webinars, and there's additional resources that are free and available. So as the board thinks about continuing to grow in professional development for the board and having goals, that could be a resource to examine if that may help. Next slide. So Board on Track is another resource that I just wanted to highlight. Not necessarily, this is not necessarily a paid advertisement, because there are some paid services, but Board on Track really supports charter governing boards they have for decades. And what I want to point to is they have a robust outward facing free library. So digital library, free resources. And so similar to the National Charter School Resource Center, they also have, a series of workshops that are dedicated just for charter boards, and those services are free within our library. Next slide. All right. And we'll finish on the very last slide, I believe, and I'll entertain any questions. But again, appreciate one more slide. Appreciate the time that you provided me just to connect with you and share a little bit more information. Appreciate everything that you do for your students and families. And good governance with good intentions is a hallmark of our government. And I feel that is definitely the case with this group and this organization. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Dr. Loomis, for pulling that together. What an incredible resource. Really, really appreciate it. It's that type of thing that makes it so much easier to be a board member. Really
looking forward to diving in for sure. Thank you.
We appreciate it so much. And I hope you can stay on for some of our meeting as well. I'm going to talk just a little bit about some of the things we're involved in before we get into the Parent Square presentation, because it dovetails so much with what Corey was talking about. The team has been working since January on taking another look at our overarching goals in our strategic plan. You know, we're very, very strong in terms of our process for strategic planning. The annual initiatives that staff develops along with the champion for each initiative, there needs to be a direct connection to the overarching goals so that we're sure that we're cascading throughout the organization in terms of what we're looking to accomplish on behalf of students. So we're just fleshing out those overarching goals just a little bit more, a little more clarity. We have a system for overarching goals and the initiative, which includes not only people and timelines, but also resources identified for achieving our goals and our initiatives over the short term and the long term. So we've been working on that. We had a spring retreat. Was that last week or the week before? I lose track. But we had a 2-day spring retreat, which is kind of the mid time when we look at our goals, which of course we're always reporting back to the board on the achievement of those goals. And in fact, the evaluation, the success or the failure of the leadership team, the senior leaders, rests on the accomplishment of those those initiatives for the year. The workforce as a whole goes back to their department. They consider the initiatives and how they are integrated with other departments to deliver the results in terms of the initiatives. And then they break out individually with their supervisors so that every employee in our organization has a scorecard that reverts right back to the initiative, which reverts right back to the overarching goals, which reverts right back to our report back system and evaluation for the board. And I wanted to bring that in now because it's so closely aligned with the concepts that Corey's sharing. I mean, he's right on, I don't know if he's right on or we're right on, but it's a perfect melding. And so that's excellent. Aside from that, I've been working with a leadership team on innovation. Now, innovation is very much a part of our persona. And since we received the first Baldrige Award and the second Baldrige Award, that was our anchor school, but certainly impacts all our schools, there has been a real focus on innovation and the kinds of innovation that we've been doing. We choose, and there's lots of press out there on innovation. There's 4 different categories of innovation. One is the incremental innovation, which is improving within your organization. Another one is an adjacent innovation, which is take for example, technology or programs, things that are working very well for you that you expand out further. Thirdly, and fourthly, you have disruptive innovations which affect your sector, and our schools, particularly with their long history, have greatly impacted the charter movement, have greatly impacted hybrid learning, have greatly impacted the sector, not only in California, but nationally. And we can document that impact. And then last but not least, we've had over 30 years and our anchor school is celebrating their 30th year in 2024. And all of our schools will be celebrating the fact that there have been tremendous amounts, examples of innovation at the most radical level. 30 years ago, hybrid schools were not held in great acclaim at all. And I shared that opinion. We weren't very thrilled with some of what we saw in terms of independent study that we found in alternative settings throughout the state. But we believe that we have certainly, and other people believe, that we've brought that to a high point, to a place where certainly post-secondary education is adopting it all across the country. And so our so is traditional school. They're struggling to get it right, but because our teachers are all trained in leading edge certification, they get how they what they're supposed to do and how they do it. So innovation and research and all of that research is it's Altus model style. I remember when I was with the district, everything we did, we had to correlate to some kind of research being done out there. We are using our own data. We form our hypothesis. We are using a scientific, technical approach to achievement and what we're trying to do. And so we have our research, and we use, what's interesting is that we use the most challenging comparables that we find, that we can find. And depending on whether it's instructional or operational, those comparables may not even be within our sector. So we find challenging data that we can measure ourselves against. And don't get me started on that, because any one of us can go on with that for several hours. Some interesting things that are evolving. Again, one of our schools is working on working with the Commission on Teacher Credentialing. And going forward, it appears, and it's a long, difficult process. That's why people don't do it. But we strongly believe in a school within a school, Altus University, as we call it. This provides training, professional development for all sectors, as you know, and it's extremely successful. We're embellishing that, and I'm trying to think of what are we going to call it. It'll be under that same head of Altus University. But with the approval of the CTC, we will be able to provide instruction for our teachers over the long term so that they can accomplish their preliminary credential. And of course, we do that at no cost. Many of the teachers are interested in moving forward to special ed and other things. So we, whereas there is a shortage in the world of qualified teachers, we prefer, if we can, to home grow our own, and we hold them to very stringent standards, but they enjoy it because they get a lot of support. And it would be at no cost. Some of those programs cost as much as $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, depends on where you go. Some of the districts offer them, you know, cheaper, much cheaper, or even free, but not many. So we're looking at that coming down in the fall. The community college piece, dual enrollment is not a new thing, but it's a thing that some people do better than others. We don't open our articulated courses and our community college courses just to kids that are seeking it. We try, and we're moving more and more with the Audeo Corp schools, to make every student aware and open to these courses. And in fact, for graduation, two of them are required. So we have CTC courses, career courses, community college courses, all of that is available to every student. And so we're continuing to refine that. It's been wonderful this year, and it'll be even better next year. There are trends in public education, and I know Corey encourages us not only to look within ourselves, but in our environment, because our environment radically affects what's happening to all of us in public education. One of the things that I know you've been concerned about, the boards have been concerned about, staff has been concerned about, are the numbers of students that have been lost across the country and here in California. I think it was about 750,000 nationally. I know in LA it was 150,000 students that they could not account for. And so we're looking at that and we're trying to figure it out. We know that one of the things that we continue to do that the state doesn't do, and that is maintain a dropout rate. A dropout rate is very important to us. Of course, it would be important since we're looking at students that have either dropped out or are potentially, they're so disengaged, they're going to drop out. So we really work at keeping that data close and lower than the norm and having ways of tracking students. So losing students is not acceptable. I'm not sure how they disappear totally, but we certainly work against that trend. Special education numbers are increasing in our Adeo schools, and you know, we'll take them wherever they are and we'll work with them, and we have the resources to support them. That is very quick, very fast, but I hope you see how many of those elements, that things that we've mastered and things that we're working on, are consistent with a direction that I know Mr. Loomis sees. Our next presentation is on Parent Square. Parent Square is where we've gone for an expanded relationship with our students' families. Now, other school, other districts, other places use Parent Square, but Parent Square has a depth of information that's available. One of the things that I'm very confident that we do that other places don't do is to manage the data as it relates to, you know, who's picking up out there, how are we interfacing. A lot of studies gone into it, and we have systems down, which I believe is using Parent Square to the maximum. So now I'd like to introduce Elizabeth Short, and she's going to give a short presentation on how we got there and what it is that we're doing. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Mary. Hello, everyone. So for those of you who don't know me, Elizabeth Short, I've been with the organization about 13 years now. I am the technology integration coordinator, former learning lead, teacher, RCA. You can see I've kind of grown up with the organization. I'm very happy about it. But like Mary mentioned, I'm excited to share with you our journey with Parent Square. Give me one moment. So Parent Square, as Mary mentioned, is our new school-to-home parent, school-to-home communication platform. So today I wanted to talk to you to give you a brief context of what brought us to Parent Square, why we ultimately chose Parent Square as our platform, highlight some of the user roles and permissions, give you an overview of the platform, and then share some of our implementation timeline as we are in year one of our multi-year implementation plan. So to begin, I wanted to share some of the data. As you have heard, we are big fans of data, but part of my role is collecting this data from our instructional staff in particular about communication methods, technology tools, collaboration tools. I was really interested, especially throughout the pandemic, of changes within communication with students and their families. You can see that we have a wide range of communication methods via text, email, phone calls. But what's interesting is to see the steady increase in text messaging being used by our students and families to communicate with their teachers and their instructional support staff, right? And a steady decline in traditional phone calls. I also surveyed staff on their experience, what they thought was the most effective communication method when working with students and families. And by far, it is text messaging, followed closely by, not closely, text messaging by landslide, right? But still communicating through email and phone calls. And I want to remind everyone that they are using all of these methods every day. It's just texting is by far the most effective and the preferred method by our families. And so that tells us kind of how families and students prefer to consume their information, right? So no longer listening to information, but they're reading it and accessing it mostly on their phones. So in thinking about how we're going to share information out, we really needed something that was mobile friendly, something that aligned with texting, and could help us create some visually engaging content for families to consume. So we know how our families want to be communicated with. Wanted to take a look at what is being communicated out. And so across the schools, we have different departments that have a lot of information that they need to share out to families. And so previously, the practice was create the content, share it with teachers to share out with their students and families. Right? There was no direct connection between our equity and inclusion administrator and families directly, right? On top of all this information that needs to get out from our different departments, instructional staff also communicating out, you can see this very non-exhaustive list of things they want to get out to their families. And so you can imagine the amount of time that it takes for our teachers and our instructional support staff to communicate information, right? And most of this was being done through email. So think about an email with an attachment. There's no real way to know if that got to the recipient, if it was opened, if it was read, if it got bounced back. So you can see there's a lot that's going out to our families. We want to keep them involved and informed, but we needed a more effective way to do that across the board. So that led us to Parent Square. Some features within Parent Square that we really like, so it's one centralized tool. Right. We needed something centralized under our umbrella. Okay. There's two-way parent engagement with Parent Square, which is wonderful. So not only are families and students receiving and consuming the information, they have the opportunity to engage with it, to appreciate it, to send questions directly to the author. They're able to engage in that way. It integrates with our student information system. So this is... coming from tech integration, this is huge. So what this means is that our student information system remains our single source of truth as far as student data, as far as student contact information, family contact information. We have that single source of truth, and that is what is integrated into Parent Square. This also eliminates the need for teachers or other staff to maintain rosters within Parent Square or groups. It all happens automatically during the nightly sync. So imagine as students enroll, they're automatically included in our Parent Square sync the next day. So they're getting that information right away upon enrollment. There's quick translation. So what that means, many of our families have speak different languages. And so that's been a unique challenge to make sure that all of our families can access all the information that they need in regards to school events, school news, to feel confident in communicating with their teachers, with the support staff. So Parent Square enables this within the platform. Families can set their preferences so they can receive information in their preferred method. So through text, email, through the app, or through voice calls. And then something else that was really important to us was the security oversight and the analytics that Parent Square can provide. So again, we're bringing everything under one umbrella. We have oversight over what's being communicated out to our families. And then we also have the analytics on the back end of how are things being received. At a very granular level, we can drill down and assign role permissions. And so I'm thinking about mass school communication. You want to make sure, you know, that people are communicating with the right groups, right? And appropriately. So we took some time before launching this to really identify different roles within our organization and what permissions they would have within Parent Square. This is an example of what is being sent out via Parent Square. So this is the same post. So on the right-hand side of the screen, this is what it looks like on a mobile phone. And then on the left-hand side, this is the desktop or within the app itself. So this was our family learning series flyer. This was sent directly by our curriculum and professional learning administrator directly to families all within one click. So you can imagine the time saver, right? So this wasn't there wasn't a trickle down. This was direct from Catherine Rambo to our families. They're able to engage with it, ask questions to her directly, and this also saved time on the teacher's end, not having to relay this information to their families. On top of that, that easily one click, it goes to everyone. We can also drill into the delivery statistics now of how are families opening this message? Has it been delivered successfully? Has it been opened? This allows us a lot of follow-up, right? Gives us the information we need to make sure that our families are receiving the information that we need them to receive. You can see it highlights the total number of recipients. It breaks down how they are receiving information, whether it's been just delivered and or opened, as I mentioned. So you can see a lot of power within the statistics page. And this is with every single post that is made. Here's what Parent Square looks like. Just an overview of the platform itself. So you can see it's has a social media type feel. So families and students are familiar with the layout of the platform. In the middle, there's a news feed. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Again, it's mobile friendly, which is really important to us, and families can elect to receive text notifications or app reminders. On the main news feed platform, the middle is our main news feed where all of the posts that are relevant to that user show up. So users are only seeing what's applicable to them. So they're not being bombarded with information that doesn't apply to them or their student. So it's really targeted information based on user. On the left-hand side of the screen is the navigation pane. And then on the right-hand side, you can toggle your view depending on what groups you're a part of. And what's really nice from a training perspective or a supports perspective, all users have the same view. So if you think about teaching someone how to use it, they have the same view that you do. So it's really easy to teach them how to navigate it. There are three ways that we use Parent Square to communicate messages out. The first being posts. So good for large groups all receiving the same information. Direct messages are exactly what it sounds like. Those are those small group or one-on-one conversations that are private. So you think about, again, how are families wanting to communicate on their phones via text or messaging. So this allows for that. And then alerts allows us to broadcast information organization-wide. So think of like emergencies or important school events. Parent Square also offers us the opportunity to share our school calendar and allows for students and families to display events in their own calendar. So they can take these calendar events, put them in their own calendar with a click of a button, and then boom, they're getting those reminders of, hey, the learning period's ending. Make sure to turn in your work. Here's just a quick overview of our implementation timeline. Again, we're in year one. A lot of work was done on the back end, summer of 2022. And then we officially launched August of 2022 with the whole staff. We're in our PDLA cycle for year one, continue staff, reviewing data. End of the year, we'll collect that feedback from our educational partners and staff. So, that's what I would like to share about Parent Square. I'm happy to answer any questions. I can appreciate the time.
That's a fantastic amount of work. Having done software integrations and trainings myself many times, that is a significant project for sure. Does this integrate with Google Classroom and other applications that you guys use?
Currently, no. So we are not a Google school. Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you for your patience. I know a lot of staff is very familiar with this and has heard it before, but thank you. This is the first time our board has heard about our the process that we use for communicating with home. As you know, in the past, if parents had a concern, it was always that their involvement kind of ended at the school walls, and it was very much of a closed community. It was hard to get to see the teachers, and it was challenging. Since COVID, of course, that's taken a real reversal, and parents feel that they have not only a right, but a responsibility to be integrated into what's happening with their children's education. And so I think tools like these are excellent for keeping them abreast of what's available, what's coming up, and where we can use their help, not to speak of that individual personalized communication, which is key to what we do. Thank you very much. That's the end of the president's report. Are there any questions for any of us? We'd be happy to answer. Any questions on the part of the board?
I have a quick question on that that we just saw. What is that? Who's the vendor on that?
Parent Square. So
Parent right Square. Now,
yes.
Is that a one-off, or is this something that they kind of, they've got multiple platforms to, you know, whether university or in the military or something, and then they tailor it? Because it's so well done. Do you know?
It's like a SaaS, like probably other schools can use it too, right?
Yes. So as far as I know, this is only for K-12. And I don't know of any branches off that they might do, but yeah, I can look into it and get back to you.
That's not necessary. I wouldn't want to take your time, but thank you. And you, there was a translation component to that? Okay.
Correct. So families can indicate what their preferred language is, and then they'll receive information automatically translated into that language. They can respond in that preferred language, and it'll translate back into English for us. So it's pretty powerful.
Wow. That's really great. Thank you very much. Thanks for your hard work.
That's taken, that particular aspect has taken us a long way. I remember about, oh, that was before COVID now, that I went to the technological show in Las Vegas. It's held every year. And that would be now four years ago maybe. And I was looking for some means of translating the communications, because here in San Diego, generally our schools have about 52 languages. And so this really answers it. The technology just speeded up, and it addressed our need perfectly. So that helps. Thank you very much. Greg, that's it for us.
Thank you. Well, we're into, I don't know, Mary, you're into 5.4.3 strategic plan. He kind of rolled through that. We're down to 5.5 strategic plan update. Tim, are you going to report on that for us?
Yes. On your, in your board packets, pages 29 through 52, this is the reports that show some of the outcomes. This specifically are the participation reports for each school. Beginning, the most updated reports are September 19th, 2022 through January 6th, 2023. And they include the school, the resource centers, and if the school is big enough to have a region, would be included in here. Our kind of our goal is, our LCAP goal is 84% or higher, would be high performance. Currently, right now, if we look at each of the six schools, Adeo 2, their participation, which is their attendance based upon work product for us, is 91.9%. Adeo 3 is 90.6%. Adeo Valley is 92.9%. Rosemont is 88%. Mirrors is 85.8%, and Sweetwater is 91.8%. So each school is meeting their LCAP goals or exceeding it. And Adeo Valley is actually at the highest right now, 92.9%. So overall, positive reports.
That is awesome. Thank you, Tim. We're moving on to the consent agenda 6.0. So all matters listed under the consent agenda are considered by the board to be routine and will be approved and acted by the board in one motion in the form listed below. Unless specifically requested by a board member for further discussion or removed from the agenda, there'll be no discussion of these items prior to the board votes on them. The president recommends approval of all consent agenda items that we have before us there. So do I have a motion for approval of consent agenda items 6.1.1 to 6.1.9.6?
Waylon Myers make a motion to approve 6.1 in its entirety.
Thank you.
And I'm Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Thank you. So, Chris Gordon, your vote?
Aye.
Jim Herr?
Aye.
Waylon Myers?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. So 7.0 action items. So 7.1, these are the action items for Odeo Charter School 2, specifically consider approval of the second interim report, 2022-2023. Lynn, are you going to report on that for us?
Before Lynn begins, I'd just like to remind our new board members that every school, and we have six schools, right, in Odeo? Six, yes, has a financial report that needs to be approved separately. So they're all different. It isn't like we can all lump them together. They have different authorizers, different CES numbers. So we're going to go through this as quickly as we can, but don't hesitate to ask any questions that you might have. Lynn?
Thank you.
And I'm sure that they read their board packet in its entirety with a pencil in one hand and a calculator in the other, because it's a lot.
I know. Really? Thank you. Okay, Lynn?
Yes, thank you. The agenda item 7.1.1 is shown on pages 293-301. Charter schools are mandated to file two financial interim reports during the fiscal year. And the reports that reports the financial health of the school, and it compares the actual financial activities over the approved operational budget. The first interim report and the second interim reports, they are due. First interim report is it covers the financial activities from July 1st to October 31st of every fiscal year. The second interim reports, which is what is on the agenda, covers the period of July 1st to January 31st. The interim reports are submitted to the authorizer and the county superintendent of schools pursuant to the regulations. For the second interim report, the deadline to submit as prescribed by the California Education Code is no later than March 15th. The interim reports, as I have said, it compares the operational budget items versus the aggregate totals for the revenues, expenditures, the excess or deficiencies between revenues and expenditures, and the net fund balance. You're able to see the basically the profit and loss for the school, and as well as the balance sheet items. The school reviews the reports for the variance between budget as well as the actual amounts. For Odeo 2, second interim report, the projected ending fund balance is $1.564 million, which means that the school is in good financial health and can meet the its financial obligations. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm going to entertain a motion to approve 7.1.1.
Waylon Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.1.1.
And this is Chris Gordon, and I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris, your vote?
Aye.
Jim?
Aye.
Waylon?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. So 7.1.2, review the February revised operational budget assumptions for fiscal year 2022-2023. Consider approval of February revised operating budget fiscal year 2022-2023. Lynn.
Thank you, Greg. This budget item, this board agenda item is shown on pages 302-313. And for the budget assumptions for Odeo Charter School 2, it is shown from pages 302-310, which indicates the basis of the development of the budget. It is very comprehensive and provides information as to how non-classroom-based or independent study programs such as Alta schools are funded and how the average daily attendance is earned, the funding rates per grade level, the revenue projection tables is also shown, the description of the special funding as well as one-time special funding, the number of the full-time equivalent positions, the retirement contributions, as well as the health benefits. We are presenting to the board a balanced budget for all the Odeo Charter School Corporation schools. Odeo 2 February revised operational budget is based upon an estimated P2ADA of 260 with an enrollment projection of 294. The total projected revenue is $4.602 million. Of the $4.602 million, $635,916 represents one-time special funding for the year. This is equivalent to 14% of the total revenue. The revenues for the Odeo 2 is comprised of 80% for LCFF, or the local control funding formula, and other state revenues. 8% represents federal revenues. 11% represents other financing resources, and 1% for local revenue. As far as the on the expenditure side, the projected expenditures is $4.050 million, which it is comprised of the payroll and benefits at $2.546 million. And payroll and benefits represents 55% of the total revenue budgeted. Books and supplies is budgeted at $116,452, 3% of which represent 3% of the total revenue. Services and other operating expenses is at $1.212 million. That's about 26% of the revenue. Capital outlay for $172,275, which is about 4%. We also budget for reserves for economic uncertainties and operational reserve. And for Odeo Charter School 2, it is at 12% of the total revenues in the amount of $552,288. Additionally, the school has also allocated budget of $13,785 for research and development to support the works that are directed towards innovation, introduction, and improvement necessary for the support of the school, consistent with the Odeo Charter School's mission and purpose. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. Is there anything about either the interim report, the second interim report, or the operational budget that causes you any concern?
Not me. Are you talking to me?
Lynn, but either of you.
No, we wouldn't present it to you if they had any concerns. We'd try to work it out.
Are you saying you'd hide it?
No, we mean
of course that not.
We don't let ourselves get into situations like that.
I'm kidding. Of course not. You know, your reporting is stellar. There's a lot of information. I just want to make sure that everything lines up and you feel like there's no areas of concern in there, and it doesn't sound like it.
No, that's why we present these summaries. That was actually a board idea, and we love it, to present the board summary, which gives an overview of where we're at. So we're doing quite well, actually.
Yes, thank you. And sorry for my bad.
I would add that you'll note that the research component that we've added, we're moving more and more, as I shared earlier about innovation, we're moving more and more toward really taking a formal approach to our research, looking at ourselves and how we can improve what we're doing and how we can create the templates so that other people can use. It was actually proposed by a county board member who said, you know, you need to do this, put it into white papers. And, you know, we did the book and we do training manuals and things, but going forward, we certainly want to try and formalize a lot of what we've researched and models, an enhancement of the model that we've created. And we want to get that out there so that other people can benefit from it. Not if you just walk up the street and ask about how are you doing your marketing or how are you doing this or that, we want to have a formal relationship where we know who we're talking to and how they intend to use it, so that we're assured that the models that we are providing are used accurately and efficiently and are geared to success. So that was why she brings up how much we are budgeting for research.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you. And with that, I would entertain a motion to approve. That was 7.1.2.
Waylon Myers make a motion to approve item 7.1.2.
This is Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Thank you. Chris Gordon, your vote, please.
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr?
Aye.
Waylon Myers?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. 7.2.1. Second interim report, we're on Adeo Charter School 3. Lynn, please.
Thank you. I'm Greg. Agenda item 7.2.1 is shown on pages 314 to 316 of the board packet. Per Adeo Charter School 3's second interim report, the projected ending fund balance is $1.086 million, which means that the school is in good financial health and is also able to meet its financial obligations. Thank you.
Thank you. So I would entertain a motion to approve 7.2.1, the second interim report as presented by Lynn. Thank you.
Waylon Myers and I make a motion to approve 7.2.1.
And this is Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Thank you. Chris Gordon, your vote, please. Mr. Mute.
Excuse me, Chris Gordon, aye.
Thanks. Jim Herr.
Jim Herr, aye.
Aye. And Waylon Myers.
Waylon Myers, aye.
Thank you. That passed unanimously. So 7.2.2, the operational budget assumptions, same for Adeo 3. Lynn?
Thank you. Adeo 3 budget assumptions and February revised operational budget is shown on pages 317 to 328 of the board packet. Adeo Charter School 3 February revised operational budget is based upon an estimated P280A of 126 and enrollment projection of 132. The total projected revenue for the school is $2.563 million. Of the total revenue, it is comprised of 80% for the local control funding formula and the other state revenues, 9% for federal revenues, 10% for other financing resources, and less than 1% for local revenue. The revenue includes a budget for one-time special funding, which a total of $332,837, and that represents about 13% of the budgeted total revenue for the year. As far as the expenditures, the projected expenditures is $2.255 million, which is comprised of your total payroll benefits at $1.366 million. That is about 53% of the total revenue. The books and supplies is $70,209. That's about 3% of the total revenues. Services and other operating expenses is budgeted at $758,470, which is about 30% of the total revenue. We also budget for capital outlay, which is $59,942, reserve of 12% of the total revenues in the amount of $307,566 has been allocated for the operational reserve, as well as the reserves for economic uncertainties. As similar to Adeo Charter School 2, Adeo 3 has allocated $7,008 for research and development. Thank you.
Thank you. I entertain a motion to approve 7.2.2.
I'm Waylon Myers, and I make a motion to approve 7.2.2.
Thank you. Chris Gordon, your vote, please.
Chris Gordon, I second that motion, and my Chris Gordon vote is aye.
Thank you very much. Jim Herr, your vote?
Jim Herr vote is aye.
And Waylon Myers?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passed unanimously. So 7.3.1 LCAP update. Lynn, 7.3.1.
I think Tim will do the report.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Tim. Tim's going to give us that. I beg your pardon. Tim, do you have a report for item 7.3.1?
Yeah, on pages 329 to 446, for the Adeo Valley, this is the only LCAP. We made some minor revisions to their LCAP based upon feedback from the Riverside County Office of Education. Those just include a few different expanding on some of the definitions of the things that we're working on. The next June board meeting will be the formal annual update to the LCAP for Adeo Valley.
Thank you. Mary, did you have anything you want to add to that?
Nothing other than, you know, we're funded primarily by the formulas used in the LCAP. And in our case, because it's hybrid, it's work completed. But just to bring your attention to the fact that there's a bill out there, and it may get some momentum where, in fact, the funding model for California schools might change. That doesn't mean the LCAP will go away, but the funding formula may change, and the change would be that it would be based on enrollment. And we would like that very much if that happened. You know, we've talked to our lobbyists, and I don't know if it's the right time if it really occur, but
is that opposed to attendance?
Opposed to attendance, yes.
Wow.
It would, the hopes of why they put it on attendance was that kids were really there and that they were really learning. But the traditional school has a lot of reasons for kind of backing away from that. It makes the funding, the demonstration of funding easier, actually. But also, it didn't do what it was meant to do. There is no correlation whether they're there. It certainly helps, but that doesn't necessarily impact their learning. They have to be there and engaged. So that's a whole other kettle of fish. Hmm. And that's what we work on, is the real engagement. You know, you could have a student sitting in a seat all day long and maybe never really engage. But for other reasons, we would certainly support the enrollment piece, because we have pretty good results of our kids being involved in their learning. And so the enrollment would be a good, a welcome change. I don't know if it'll happen, but just want to the board, let them know that it's out there. Tim, anything
Thank
else?
You.
On that? Tim,
you
finished?
Nothing further.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Mary. I got to think about that a little bit, but interesting comments that you had on that. So I would entertain a motion to approve 7.3.1.
Wayland Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.3.1.
And Jim Herr, I would second that motion.
Thank you. Chris Gordon, your vote?
Aye.
Jim Herr?
Jim Herr, aye.
And Wayland?
Wayland Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is an aye, so that passes unanimously. So 7.3.2, second interim report. Please, Lynn.
Thank you. Agenda item 7.3.2 is shown on pages 447 to 452 of the board packet. Per Odeo Valley's second interim report, the projected ending fund balance is $2.109 million. Which signifies that the school is in good financial health and is able to meet its financial obligations. Thank you.
Thank you. So motion to approve 7.3.2.
Wayland Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.3.2.
And Chris Gordon, motion to second that.
Thank you. And Chris, your vote?
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr?
Jim Herr, aye.
And Wayland Myers?
Wayland Myers, aye.
Greg Haggard is aye. That passed unanimously. So we're on to 7.3.3, review the February revised operational budget assumptions. Lynn.
All right. Thank you. Odeo Valley budget assumptions and the February revised operational budget is shown on pages 453 to 463 of the board packet. Odeo Valley February revised operational budget is based upon an estimated P280A of 247, and the enrollment projection is 260. The total projected revenue for the school is $4.144 million. The total revenue is comprised of 90% for LCFF and the other state revenues, 6% for federal revenues, 3% for other financing sources, and less than 1% for local revenue. The budget includes one-time special funding for revenues. The total one-time special funding is $285,902 for the school, which represents about 7% of the total budgeted revenues. On the other side of the budget is the expenditures. We projected total expenditures at $3.936 million, which is comprised of the total payroll and benefits at $2.711 million. This represents 65% of the total revenue. Books and supplies is budgeted at $362,586. That's about 9% of the total revenue. Services and other operating expenses is at $843,662. That's about 20% of the revenue budgeted. Capital outlay is $17,455, which is 0.4%. Reserve of 5% of the total revenue is in the amount of $207,177 has been allocated for operational reserves and reserves for economic uncertainties. Also, Odeo Valley has allocated $11,508 for research and development. Thank you.
Lynn, you have a much lower reserve here than the previous two schools. Can you explain that?
Yes, that is correct. We have a 5% reserve for the other schools. It's because of the way the revenues are projected. It's much lesser than the other schools. And there's a lot of expenditures for this school as well. It's a much bigger size school than the Odeo 2, which is much more smaller, and Odeo 3. This is why Odeo 2 and Odeo 3 has 12% reserves.
Okay. Thank you. Entertain a motion to approve 7.3.3.
Waylon Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.3.3.
And Jim Herr, I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris Gordon, your vote, please.
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr, please.
Jim Herr, aye.
And Waylon Myers, please.
Waylon Myers, aye.
Thank you. And Greg Haggard votes aye, so that passes unanimously. Run 7.4.1, the second interim report for around Grossmont Secondary School. Lynn.
Thank you. Grossmont Secondary School's second interim report is shown on pages 464 to 466 of the board packet. The second interim report for Grossmont Secondary School has a projected ending fund balance of $5.516 million, which means that the school is in good financial health and it can meet its financial obligations. Thank you.
Thank you. And I entertain a motion to approve 7.4.1.
Waylon Myers, I approve 7.4.1, or make a motion to approve 7.4.1.
And I am Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris Gordon, your vote?
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr, your vote?
Jim Herr, aye.
Waylon Myers, your vote?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. 7.4.2, operational budget assumptions. Lynn?
Yes, thank you. The Grossmont Secondary School budget assumptions and the February revised operational budget is shown on pages 467 to 477 of the board packet. Grossmont Secondary School revised operational budget is based upon an estimated P280A of 282 with an enrollment projection of 303. The total projected revenues for the school is $5.435 million. The total revenue is comprised of 82% for LCFF and the other state revenues. 5% of the revenue represents federal revenues. 12% is for other financing resources. and 1% for local revenue. There's also one-time special funding for the school, which amounts to $788,630, and that represents about 50% of the total budgeted revenues. For expenditures, the projected expenditures is $5.163 million, comprising of total payroll benefits at $3.678 million. That represents 68% of the total revenue. Books and supplies is about $279,000. That's about 5% of the total revenue. Services and other operating expenses is at $1.047 million, which is about 19% of the revenue. Capital outlay is $155,698. That represents about almost 3%. Reserve of 5% of the total revenues in the amount of $271,760 has been allocated for the school to support operational reserves and reserves for economic uncertainties. Also note that the school has allocated $80,450 for research and development. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to approve 7.4.2?
Waylon Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.4.2.
And I am Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris, your vote?
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim?
Jim Herr, aye.
Waylon?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggart's aye. That passes unanimously. So we're on to Miris. Second interim report, please.
Thank you. Agenda 7.5.1 is shown on pages 478 to 496 of the board packet. Premier Secondary School second interim report. The projected ending fund balance is $4.533 million, which signifies that the school is in good financial health as well, and it can meet its financial obligations. Thank you.
Thank you. Motion to approve 7.5.1.
Waylon Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.5.1.
And Jim Herr, I second that motion.
Thank you. And your vote, Chris Gordon?
Chris Gordon, aye.
Thank you. Jim Herr?
Jim Herr, aye.
And Waylon Myers?
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggart is aye. That passes unanimously. 7.5.1 budget assumptions, Lynn, please.
Yes. 7.5.2 is the Miris Secondary School budget assumptions and February revised operational budget, which is shown on pages 497 to 507 of the board packet. The Miris Secondary School February revised operational budget is based upon an estimated P280A of 308 with a projected enrollment of 399. The total projected revenue for the school is $5.897 million. Of this, the total revenue, it is comprising of 86% for LCFF and other state revenues, 5.54% for the federal revenues, 8% represents other financing resources, and less than 1% for local revenue. The revenue also includes a one-time special funding that was budgeted, and this amounts to $725,303, which represents about 12% of the budgeted total revenues. On the other side, the projected expenditures for the school is $5.336 million, which is comprised of total payroll and benefits at $3.775 million, which represents about 64% of the total revenue. We allocated books and supplies $209,325. That's about 3.55% of the revenues. Services and other operating expenses is budgeted at $1.282 million. That's about 22%. Capital outlay is also budgeted for $69,345, which is about 1%. A reserve was also budgeted at the amount of $560,174. That represents about 9%. Again, this school also allocated $17,582 for research and development. Thank you.
Thank you. And a motion to approve 7.5.2.
Brother Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.5.2.
Then I'm Jim Hearn. I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris Gordon, your vote, please.
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr.
Jim Herr, aye.
Waylon Myers.
Waylon Myers, aye.
Greg Haggard is aye. That passed unanimously. Ron Sweetwater, second interim report, Lynn.
Yes. Agenda item 7.6.61 is shown in pages 508 to 510 of the board packet. Per the Sweetwater Secondary School second interim report, the projected ending fund balance is 4.302 million, which means that the school is also in good financial health and is able to meet its financial obligations. Thank you.
Thank you. And a motion to approve 7.6.1.
Waylon Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.6.1.
And I'm Jim Herr. I second that motion.
Thank you. Your vote, please, Chris.
Chris Gordon, aye.
And Jim.
Jim Herr, aye.
And Waylon.
Waylon Myers, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. The budget assumptions, please, Lynn.
Yes. Agenda item 7.62 is for Sweetwater Secondary School budget assumptions and the February revised operational budget, which is shown on pages 511 to 521 of the board packet. The Sweetwater Secondary School February revised operational budget is based upon on an estimated P2ADA of 374 and a corresponding enrollment projection of 370. The total projected revenue is $6.572 million. The revenues is comprised of 86% for LCFF and other state revenues. 4% represents federal revenues. 9% is for other financing resources, and less than 1% for local revenue. The revenue includes, the budgeted revenue includes a budget for one-time special funding, which represents $709,524, and that's about 11% of the total budgeted revenues. For the expenditures, projected expenditures, is at $6.244 million, and that comprised total payroll benefits of $4.211 million, which is about 64% of the total revenue. Books and supplies is budgeted at $382,784. That's about 6% of the total revenue. Services and other operating expenses is at $1.529 million. That's about 23%. Capital outlay is also budgeted for $118,926, which is almost 2%. Reserve of 5% of the total revenues in the amount of $328,647 has been allocated for operational reserves and reserves for economic uncertainties. Note also that the school has allocated $19,200 for research and development. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. I have a motion to approve item 7.6.2.
I can find my mute button. Waylon Myers, I make a motion to approve 7.6.2.
And I'm Jim Herr, and I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris Gordon, may I have your vote?
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr.
Jim Herr, aye.
Waylon Myers.
Waylon Myers, aye.
Okay, Greg Haggerson, aye. So that passed unanimously. So that's it. We're down to board comments and announcements.
Before we go on to that, thank you for your patience. I know that's tedious, and I know reading it is even more tedious, but we've tried to be as concise as possible.
No, it's very appreciated. It's good work. We need to see it.
There's a huge variance, as Greg pointed out, between our teeny little schools and our larger schools. And so we're always concerned in terms of our enrollments and maintaining our enrollments for those smaller schools. Remember, we never designed that at the beginning. That was an outgrowth of the Shasta case, where we had to have different authorizers for schools they had to have the authorization within the district they resided. So it works out. And there's kids there and they're all important, no matter where they are. The other thing is this, that regulations are constantly coming from the state for everybody, for public education as a whole, which is kind of why you have gridlock sometimes. But one of the challenges we have is scheduling our board meetings so that they are in time for something that has to get approved by the board. So for that reason, we try to keep this at a minimum. We make a study of when we think would be the right time to have a board meeting. We'll be approving board meetings in June for the following year. And we try to find a time where we can get everything in at one time. We do have one outstanding piece of data that's going to come forward, and that's the DOS data. DOS, remember, is the unique formula for data that we gather for our kind of hybrid school. The traditional data that's used for regular schools doesn't compute. They figure kids stay there for 4 years. Of course, they don't stay here for 4 years. We are redirective, and there's just a lot of other ways the data doesn't jive. So we're DOS. And incidentally, our DOS schools out of the, I think it's close to 1,000 DOS schools in the state are, Tim, help me with this. Are they not in the top five?
Correct. In terms of percentage of performance, we're in the 95th to 98th percentile for most indicators across the state for our type of school.
So we need to hand in that data. And so we're going to call you, I guess Angela will be setting up just a short meeting, believe me, short, to approve the DOS data. And we're looking at April 27th. That'll give us enough time to get it in. I don't know the time, but we guarantee it won't be too long. It'll just be a quick approval of data and then move on. So you might be thinking forward to that. Other than that, as specified, our next meeting is in June. That'll be the annual meeting on June 20th. Where is it? June
22nd.
June 22nd.
But this one's going to be at 8 a.m.
Yes. Thank you very much, all of you.
When's graduation?
Graduation is June 7th. And is it the 9:30 or the 1:30?
It could be a combination depending on the school amounts. Some of Audeo Corporation would be in the morning and some would be in the afternoon.
Okay, graduation. June 7th, 9:30, 1:30.
Very good. I will be in attendance. I will be in the fun side of that. I'm going to sit with the students, but I'll be there.
Oh, too much.
That's really the best thing you can do all year.
You can come on stage. You don't have to be on the board. You can come on stage. We're going to have a canopy this year, so it's not hot.
Too much pressure up there on stage.
Okay. For me.
No, other than like getting a new puppy, going to the graduation is like the best feel-good thing you can do in an entire year.
Being on stage isn't all that bad, Greg. It's really nice.
It's voluntary. If your board members are available, we'd love for you to join us.
Okay, that's it. Then it's time to say goodbye. I feel like there should be a song here, but I'd entertain a motion to adjourn today's meeting. And I'll still see a bunch of you. I'll miss you all, but some of you will still be hounded by me in various forms. So
good. Well, I'm Waylon Myers. I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
And I'm Jim Herr. I second that motion.
Thank you. And Chris, may I have your vote?
Chris Gordon and Greg, are you sure you're not leaving just because I'm coming? And I feel like we're just getting started here.
Don't read too much into it.
Chris Gordon, aye.
Jim Herr.
Jim Herr, aye.
And Waylon Myers.
Waylon Myers, aye.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys came in, the hot shots came in and pushed the old guard out is really what happened.
Hardly. You're abandoning us, Gandalf.
No way.
Welcome again to our new board members. We're very excited.
Very, very excited.
Excited to be here, Mary.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye. See ya.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.